下我来。Maybe talk is kind of Dhamma talk, but two Dhamma talks cannot go at the same time. We have to choose one of the two. Dear Sangha, today is Wednesday, September the 7th, in the year 2011. We are on our second day of the retreat. Together we are one, nurturing the beloved community. This morning we already use the small bell. Usually in our retreat, the children learn how to invite the bell to sound. We don't say hit the bell. We don't say strike the bell. We say invite the bell to sound. Because the bell is a kind of friend. And we invite her to speak out so that we have a chance to practice. We have several kinds of bell, and this is the smallest. It has also a cushion to sit on, like us. And before we invite the bell to sound, we have to get ready. Because the one who invites the bell to sound is called a bell master. And you have to be a good bell master before you can invite the bell to sound. The bell master should be calm and solid. Because the sound emitted by the bell should have a quality that inspire people to practice. Usually the bell master would make a bow to the bell before putting the bell on his hand like this. And we can visualize our hand as a lotus flower with five petals. And the bell as a jewel in the lotus. And holding like that, we begin to breathe. To breathe in mindfully and breathe out mindfully. So when Thay is holding the bell like this, he's breathing in and out mindfully. And there is a short poem that he uses in order to breathe in and out. And this he has learned since the time he was a novice. 16. There are four lines. And the first line is for you to breathe in. The second line is for you to breathe out. And the third line for you to breathe in again. And the fourth line is for you to breathe out again. So after having breathed in and out two times with four lines, you have enough calm and solidity in yourself, and you are qualified as a bell master. Don't invite the bell unless you are calm and solid. And the poem we call a gatha, a poem, a verse, goes like this. Body, speech, and mind in perfect oneness. There are three things. Your body, your speech, what you say, and your mind. And these three become calm and come back together. Mind, speech, and body. Body, speech, and mind in perfect oneness. The three things come together. You come solid. Body, speech, and mind in perfect oneness. So when you breathe in, you bring your body, your mind together, and also your speech, which is the line that you are reading in silence. Body, speech, and mind, perfect oneness. And when you breathe out, you say the second line. I send my heart along with the sound of this bell. So the sound of the bell you are listening carries my heart in it, which is calm and solid. That's the second line. I send my heart along with the sound of this bell. Body, speech, and mind in perfect oneness. I send my heart along with the sound of this bell. And then you breathe in again and you read the third line. May all of you who listen to me get out of the realm of forgetfulness. Because many of us live in forgetfulness, dispersion, destruction, We are not mindful. We are not concentrated. We are dispersed. We are not truly there. We are not truly alive. May all of you awaken from your forgetfulness. May all those who listen to me awaken from their forgetfulness. That's the third line. And the fourth line is and transcend the path of anxiety and sorrow. Because many are caught in anxiety and sorrow. They are not happy, they are not peaceful. So that is a poem I had to learn by heart before I was allowed to invite the bell to sound. And in classical Chinese, it's much shorter. In Vietnamese, I'm sorry, much shorter. Ba nghiệp lắng thanh tịnh. Five words for the first line. Ba nghiệp lắng thanh tịnh, gửi lòng theo tiếng chuông. I send my heart along with the sound of the bell. The English is a little bit longer. Nguyện người nghe tỉnh thức, vượt thoát nẻo đau buồn. By those of you who listen to me, awaken from your forgetfulness and transcend the path of anxiety and sorrow. And after having breathed in and out two times like that, reciting silently the verse, you have enough calm and solidity in yourself, you have become a bell master, a real bell master. And then the first thing you do is to wake the bell up with half a sound only. Remember, half a sound. That's not a whole sound. That's only a half sound. And that half sound has the duty to warn people around that a whole sound is going to be produced. And they should prepare themselves to receive the full sound of the bell. So in the Buddhist tradition, we consider the sound of the bell as the voice of the Buddha from within, calling us home. There is a Buddha in you. You believe it or not, but there is a Buddha in you. That is mindfulness, concentration, insight, understanding, and love. The Buddha is in you. We are capable of being mindful. We are capable of being concentrated. We are capable of being understanding and loving. And that is the Buddha in us. So that the Buddha in us is calling us home in order to be mindful, concentrated, loving, understanding. So when you hear the bell, you are respectful because you know that that is the Buddha calling. And that is why when you hear the half sound, you know that the Buddha is about to call. That you have to prepare yourself in order to receive the message from the Buddha. And how to prepare yourself? The best way is to breathe in mindfully and breathe out mindfully and stop all talking, stop all thinking. And that is why after having made the half sound, the bell master allows time for people to prepare themselves, to stop thinking, to stop talking, to get ready. And that would need at least 5 or 6 seconds for people to breathe in, stop thinking, stop talking, and breathe out, and get ready. So if you want to be a bell master, you have to train yourself, you have to learn. First of all, you bow to the bell, and then you put the bell on your hand, and you lift it, and you begin breathing in and out. One in breath, one out breath. And then breathing in and breathing out again, one in breath and out breath. And you know that there is a sentence in this half. Body, speech and mind in perfect oneness, I send my heart along with the sound of the bell. May all of you who listen to me awaken from your forgetfulness and transcend the path of anxiety and sorrow. So during the time you breathe in and breathe out, there is that kind of recitation that helps you to be calm, to be solid. And then you make the half sound. Half sound. Waking up sound. And that is to warn people that a full sound is going to happen. And you are compassionate enough to give people enough time to prepare themselves. And that is why you give them a chance to breathe in and to breathe out to prepare themselves. Usually, our in-breath will take 2 seconds. Our out-breath will take 3 seconds. It's 5 seconds. But there are those of us who breathe longer. Many of us breathe in 3 or 4 seconds. And breathe out 5, 7 seconds. So if you are kind, you allow people plenty of time to prepare themselves. Because breathing in and breathing out is something enjoyable. You generate the energy of peace and solidity in you. So don't be too thrifty. You allow people around you to have enough time, plenty of time, to breathe in and out and prepare themselves for the reception of a full sound. And then you produce the full sound. The full sound is different from the half sound. The half sound is like this. The full sound. And when everyone hear the full sound, they begin to breathe in and out 3 times. And they enjoy breathing in, they enjoy breathing out. And there are a verse of 2 lines for them to use. I listen, this wonderful sound brings me back to my true home. I listen, this wonderful sound brings me back to my true home. I listen, this wonderful sound brings me back to my true home. So, with one full sound, people have an opportunity to enjoy breathing in and out 3 times. And they got a lot of peace, a lot of solidity in them. They cultivate peace and society and solidity by breathing in and breathing out. Very pleasant. If you train yourself, you see that breathing in and out is a very pleasant thing to do. It's very nourishing. You calm yourself down. When you are angry, when you are upset, and if you know how to listen to the bell and breathe in and out like that, you feel much better after one sound of the bell or two sounds of the bell. And for children, the in-breath and the out-breath might be shorter than the in-breath and out-breath of the adult. They may take only 2 seconds breathing in, 3 seconds breathing out. But people like Thầy, that's not enough. 2 seconds for breathing in is not enough. Thầy like to breathe in 3, 4, 5 seconds. And to breathe out longer. Usually when you breathe in 3 seconds, you breathe out 5 seconds. When you breathe in 4 seconds, you breathe out 6 seconds. And there are times when they breathe in 10 seconds and breathe out 15 seconds. And it has a lot of joy and happiness while breathing in and out like that, whether he's sitting or walking. So if you are kind, if you are a kind bell master, you allow plenty of time for people to enjoy 3 in-breath and 3 out-breath. After you have finished 3 in-breath and out-breath, give them some extra seconds. Be generous. And after that, you invite the bell to sound for the second time. The full sound. And then again, people have a chance to enjoy breathing in and breathing out 3 times again. Listen, listen, this wonderful sound brings me back to my true home. And then the third and the last full sound, and followed by 3 in-breath and out-breath. And then at this point, your role, you have fulfilled the duty of a bell master. You can put the bell down and bow to the bell for thanking the bell. So today I will let you borrow this bell and train yourself. And if you like, you might find a way to get a bell home so that at home you can practice. It's nice that every morning before going to school, you sit down and invite the bell to sound and breathe in and out with 3 sounds of bell. It means 9 in-breath and 9 out-breath. That is a lot before you go off to school. And your daddy also, your mommy also, before they go to work, they may like to sit down with you. Every one of you has a cushion to sit and to enjoy 3 sounds of the bell and to begin your day with 9 in-breath and out-breath. I think that's a very beautiful, civilized way to begin your day. And when the time for you to go to sleep come, it's good that the whole family sit down and invite the bell 3 times and breathe together before you go to sleep. I think if in the family everyone practice breathing together, there will be peace, harmony, and happiness in the family. And the bell is a real friend. So you might like to invite the bell to go home with you. And there is one last thing I would like to say. Anytime the atmosphere in the family is not so peaceful, someone get upset, someone get angry, you have the right to go to the bell and ask for help. You bow to the bell and you breathe. After you have a breathing in and out 2 times, you invite one sound to the bell. And when people in the family hear the bell, they all stop talking, thinking, and begin to breathe in and out deeply. And that will restore peace and happiness. And anyone in the family has the right to do so when he or she noticed that the atmosphere in the family is not peaceful enough. And you have to sign a peace treaty in the family. Father, mother, son, daughter, all of them have the right to invite the bell to sound every time the atmosphere in the family is less than peaceful. And that will help tremendously. You bring the Buddha home, you bring a Bodhisattva home, and ask for help every time you need. So practicing listening to the bell in the morning, practicing listening to the bell before you go to sleep, and practicing listening to the bell in order to restore peace and harmony is what you can do. And you can arrange so that in your home there is a room so that you can practice sitting down and listen to the bell. In many houses there are all kinds of rooms, a room for guests, a room for storing the toys. A room for the computer, and so on. Why not a room for the bell? For peace. And every time you get upset, you get angry, the best thing to do at that time is to go to that room, close the door, sit down, invite the bell to sound. And I'm sure after having listened and breathed in and out the 3 sounds of bell, you feel much better. And those who are not in that room, whether they are in the kitchen or in the working with their computer, when they hear the sound of the bell, they will stop cutting the carrot or working with their computer. Because according to the peace treaty, the happiness treaty, when you hear the bell, you have to stop everything. You have to stop talking, thinking, working. You just go back to your in-breath and out-breath. It's very important. And this is easy to practice. Many families have already begin that kind of practice. When the bell is invited to sound, no matter by whom, everyone in the house, when hearing the bell, stop talking, stop thinking, and go back to the in-breath and out-breath, and enjoy breathing in and out 3 times. I hope that you will discuss with your dad and your mom about this, how to set up such a room in the house, how to push a small bell, how to make a few comfortable cushions, and create a mini meditation hall in your home. I think in the 21st century, every civilized home should have a bell. So when the children hear the small bell, they may like to stand up and bow to the community before they go out and learn. The children stand up and bow and go out. And you follow Sister Fu Ying. This morning we practice guided meditation, and Brother Pablo guided us with using the exercises in the sutra on mindful breathing. And this morning we practice 12 exercises. A little bit too many. But that is a sample. The first exercise proposed by the Buddha is to become aware of your in-breath and out-breath. When you breathe in, you know this is your in-breath. Breathing in, I am aware that an in-breath is unfolding, is happening. So that you identify your in-breath as an in-breath, and you identify your out-breath as an out-breath. So you are aware of your in-breath and of your out-breath. It's very simple. Anyone can do. Breathing in, I know this is an in-breath. Breathing out, I know this is an out-breath. It's like to say this is the left, this is the right. Don't mix up. And that alone will help us to release the past, the future. If we focus on our in-breath becomes the only object of our mind. And we release everything else. And we get some freedom right away. And it is pleasant to breathe in too. And you might like to concentrate on your in-breath. Your in-breath becomes the only object of your mind. And when you are very mindful of something, you are concentrated on it. Suppose you are mindful of that flower. Somehow you are concentrated on that flower only. And mindfulness and concentration help you to release everything else. And you become freer after just a few seconds of breathing in. And in the tradition of the practice, it's always true that mindfulness and concentration bring insight. The insight is something that can liberate us from forgetfulness, from worry, from fear, from despair. And there are many kinds of insight. And insight can come right away after mindfulness and concentration. Suppose you breathe in and you become aware that you are breathing in. Not only you generate the energy of mindfulness, but you also generate the energy of concentration. You are mindful of your in-breath. You are concentrated on your in-breath. And then many kinds of insight can come right after that. You don't need to practice 8 years in order to begin to have an insight. Like in the exercise, breathing in, I feel I am alive. To feel alive is only an insight. Because if you are not alive, if you are already dead, you cannot breathe in anymore. So breathing in, and we are aware that we are breathing in, we know that we are alive. And to be alive is a wonderful thing. It's a miracle, and the greatest of all miracles, to be alive. So just 2 or 3 seconds of breathing in, you touch the miracle of being alive. So insight come right away. And there's no need to wait for a few hours, a few days. Breathing in, I'm aware that I'm alive. And so when you breathe out, you can already celebrate the fact, the miracle that you are alive. So breathing in and out like that can bring all the joy and enlightenment. Enlightenment is not something far away. Enlightenment begins with mindfulness, because mindfulness means enlightenment already. It's the same nature, like ice and water, they are the same. To be mindful means to be awake, to be enlightened. You are enlightened on the fact that you are there, alive. That is already an enlightenment. So enlightenment is a matter of every second. Wherever there is mindfulness and concentration, there is insight, enlightenment. So the first exercise, in, out, although it looks simple, it can be very deep. And you may like to spend just time, half an hour, just to practice that. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. We do not practice like a machine. We are skillful. We are alive. That is why we are not caught in the form of the practice. And every second of the practice can bring us mindfulness, concentration, and insight that can nourish and that can heal. And we should not say that the first exercise is easier than the second one. No. When you practice the second one, you see that the second one can be included in the first one. And if you practice well the first one, you already practice the second, the third, and so on. And then the second exercise proposed by the Buddha is breathing in, I follow my in-breath all the way through. Suppose your in-breath is presented by this marker. It lasts 3 or 4 seconds. It has a beginning, it has an end. And breathing in, you follow your in-breath from the very beginning to the end, all the way through. There is no interruption of mindfulness and concentration. Breathing in, I follow my in-breath all the way through, fully concentrated. And by breathing in like that, you cultivate concentration. You are fully concentrated on your in-breath, nothing else. So we know that the second exercise to follow your in-breath and out-breath is not another kind of exercise. It's very much the same. Only if we know how to do it, and then the quality of the practice will be higher. When you follow your in-breath from the beginning to the end, you are more concentrated. And the more you are concentrated, the quicker insight can come. You can enjoy your insight. And although these insights have your in-breath and out-breath as an object of your mind, it belong, your in-breath and out-breath belong to the realm of the body. But already feelings, perceptions are there. Because breathing in, you might feel the joy of breathing. You might feel pleasant, alive. You might see, you might touch the miracle of being alive. That is the perception. So, although our breath belongs to the realm of the body, but our breath contains within itself the feelings and the perceptions. Usually students distinguish between the first 4 exercises as dealing with the body. But we know very well that body is made of non-body elements. And that is why while we are handling the body, we are handling also the non-body elements, namely feelings, perceptions, and so on. And the third exercise is to become aware of your body. This is to be aware of the breath only. Now, with the third exercise, while breathing in, you use the energy of mindfulness generated by your practice of breathing in, and you recognize the existence of your body. You connect with your body. In the beginning, you connect with your breath. Your breath is like a vehicle, bring you home to your body. This is the way the Buddha taught. The first exercise is to connect with your breath, and the third is to connect with your body. And when mind and body are together, thanks to the mediation of mindful breathing, you are there. When mind and body are together, you are there. Here and now. And you can touch the many wonders of life in you and around you. In the teaching of Buddhist psychology, your mind has several functions, several layers. And we distinguish at least two layers of consciousness. And the lower part is called a store. And the upper part is called mind consciousness. Store consciousness is always with the body. People in the realm of neuroscience, they like to describe store consciousness as background consciousness. And store consciousness has the capacity to store information, to process information, and to store information. It's like a super computer. It is always with the body. It is in every cell of our body. And the job of store consciousness is to get the information, to process information, and to store information. When you first learn to drive, you use a lot of your mind consciousness. But after a few weeks of learning, everything that you learn come down to store consciousness. When you drive well, you don't need your mind consciousness anymore. It is a store that does the work of driving. Store consciousness is very quick, much quicker than mind consciousness. If you can avoid an accident, survive an accident, that's thanks not to mind, but to store. Mind consciousness is both slow and expensive. You spend a lot of sugar, a lot of nutriment using mine. Yeah, it's more expensive, and mine is slow. If you wait for the mind to react, it's maybe too late. So when you are driving, when you drive, it is thought consciousness that does the job of driving, not your mind. And you may be talking with the person sitting next to you, you are completely absorbed in your thinking, and yet thought continue to drive and avoid all dangers and accidents. So when we say bring your mind back to your body, it does not mean that you bring your store back to your body. Your store is always in your body. You are on an automatic mode. And you can continue without mind consciousness. So these are three or four exercises. It has to do with mind. Store is always with your breathing. Instead, store with the nervous systems regulate the rhythm of your heart and of your breathing. But when you practice the first or the second exercise of mindful breathing, that is, you have to use your mind. And when you practice like that, your mind joins your body, and you establish a link between mind and thought. And mind and thought should communicate well. Otherwise, there will be mental illness, conflict inside. And the practice helps us to connect with our body and to connect with thought consciousness. There are many informations down here, down there, and mind is not in touch. So you have to do in such a way that mind can go back to the body and mind can get connected with store and getting in touch with all the things that are stored down there, that have been processed and preserved down there. Thought consciousness has the role of preserving all these informations. And in Buddhist psychology, we speak of thought consciousness in terms of seeds. The database, all seeds, every information that store receive and process and maintain, they are there in form of seeds. And every time you need the information, you just touch the seed, and they will come up to mind. Mind is a kind of screen. You have a seed of anger down here. And when someone says something or does something that can touch the seed of anger, the seed of anger manifests on the screen of the mind. And the energy of anger is born. We call it a mental formation. mental formation. Tâm hành, citta samskara. And before it become a mental formation, it exists down there in the form of a seed. Bija is the word in Sanskrit. Chúng tử. The seed. And that is why when we bring our mind home to our body, we have a chance to touch store, touch the body and the store, and we can have a chance to get in touch with all the seeds down there. We can help, and we can cultivate free will, and we are capable, we are able to select the kind of seeds we want to manifest up there. We know that when a seed like anger or despair come up, the landscape of mind is not beautiful. We suffer. That is why we want them to sleep quietly down there. These unwholesome seed. And we like to invite the more positive seeds down here to come up. The seed of joy, the seed of compassion, the seed of understanding, the seed of love. And it is the mind that does the work of inviting. So in the Buddhist teaching, there is the practice of true right diligence. It has the practice of diligence has four steps, not steps but aspects. The first aspect of practice is that the negative seeds, we try our best not to touch, not to invite them to come up. The seed of anger, the seed of despair, the seed of violence, the seed of craving is there in our consciousness. And the first aspect of practice consists in leave them alone, do not invite them to come up. If they come up, we suffer. And at the base, they grow more. If we allow them to have a lot of chances to manifest as a mental formation, down there, they continue to grow. So the first aspect of the practice is do our best not to give them a chance to come up. And we know that they are there inside of us, the seat of craving, the seat of anger, of fear. So in our daily life, we should try not to consume in such a way that allow them to have a chance to manifest. And when we watch television, when we read a magazine, the television program or the article might contain a lot of violence and fear and anger or craving. And if we are not aware, we do not practice the fifth mindfulness training, we consume items that have the ingredient of violence and fear and anger and despair. We are helping these seeds in us to grow and to manifest. So in a relationship, we can do like this. We agree with our partner that we should not water the unwholesome seeds in each other. Darling, you know I have these seeds in me. And if you water the seed of jealousy, anger, fear in me, I will suffer. And if I suffer, you will have to share my suffering. So I promise, darling, that I will not water these seeds in you. I'll be careful. I promise you that I will not water these seeds in me and in you. And if you really care for me, you do the same. You make the promise not to water these seeds in yourself and in me. And this is a treaty of love, treaty of peace. In a relationship, this must be the practice. That is the first aspect of the practice. Not to give unwholesome seeds a chance to come up in oneself and in the person of the other person. And if they do not have a chance to come up, they will become weaker and weaker. And if we give them a chance, not only we suffer, but we give them a chance to grow the seed of craving and fear. And the second aspect of the practice is if by chance a negative seed has already manifest, we should do something right away in order to help it to go back, to go down as quickly as possible. Not by the way of suppressing them. There are many ways. We have to acknowledge. We have to be aware. Breathing in, I know the seed of anger has come up. Hello, my anger, I know you are there. I will take good care of you. There are many ways in order, after having acknowledged its presence, it can help it to go down here and sleep again. And one of the ways is to invite a good seed to come up. A seed of joy, a seed of compassion. We do have these beautiful seeds. It's like we have a collection of compact discs with good music. And when a piece of music does not please us, why do we have to listen? We can push on a button and stop. And we can change the CD. So we have good things down there. Why don't we invite them to come up? Why do we allow ourselves to be under the rule, the domination of anger and fear or despair? So change the CD. And that is what the Buddha recommended. change the CD. You change it for yourself. When a mental formation of fear, anger is there, do something. After recognizing it, after having said hello to it, you invite something else to come up. And then that will create, that will change the landscape of mind consciousness. And that will help the negative mental formation to go back to a seat again. It's like in the internet, there are many good things we have to choose. If we allow the bad things to come up, and then we'll be under the influence of that. So we do it for ourselves, and we help our partner, our children to do it also. There are good things in them. You say something, you do something, and touch the good things in them, and they will arise. And it's easier to help the negative one to go back as a seed again. So the first aspect of the practice is when is if the negative seed has not manifested, keep it down there. Do not give it a chance. The second aspect is if by chance it has manifested, and then do something to help it to go back to the form of a seed. And the third one is the good seed in you. Let us give them a chance to manifest. There are many good things in us that are preserved, stored by consciousness, like joy, happiness, forgiveness, compassion, understanding, love. We have plenty of these beautiful things. The Buddha nature in us. So when we come to a retreat like this, we have a chance to water many good seeds. Doing walking, doing sitting, listen to a Dhamma talk. We allow these beautiful seeds to manifest. We feel better. We feel happy. Because we know how to water the good seeds, to allow the good seeds to have a chance. The beautiful seeds give them a chance to manifest. And when they have manifested, keep them longer up there. The joy, the love should continue. When you have a loving friend visiting, you like to keep her longer. You like to keep him longer because that person brings so much joy. So the same thing is true here. When a feeling, when a mental formation of joy, of peace, of understanding, of compassion has manifested, keep it up there as long as possible. And down there, they are able to grow. The seed of love, understanding, and freedom. If they have a chance to manifest up here and make the landscape of the mind consciousness beautiful, and then entertain it. Give it up there as long as you should. And down here, the seed will grow. This is the practice of transformation of the base, cultivating the good things at the base. So mind consciousness can recognize every mental formation manifested here and get connected with all the seeds down here. And mind consciousness has the capacity to nourish the good, positive seeds. And mind consciousness can also help to recognize and to transform the negative things, because everything can be changed. With intervention of understanding and compassion, we can reduce, we can transform the seed of ignorance, the seed of delusion, the seed of discrimination, the seed of anger and fear in us. So that is why mind consciousness can collaborate with store in order to handle the seeds down here. We come back to this again. We should continue with our fourth exercise. When we come back to our body, recognize that our body is a wonder, that the body contains the kingdom of God inside. But we can also recognize that there are tension and pain in our body. The flowers are there, but the mud, some mud is also there. But the practice is not to fight, to suppress, but to handle with attention, to handle with care, with compassion. So when we go home to our body, we may recognize the fact that there are negative aspects in the body, like tension and pain. And the fourth exercise is to help release the tension and reduce the pain. Breathing in, I'm aware of the tension in my body. Breathing out, I allow my body to release the tension. And deep, total relaxation is the content of the fourth exercise of mindful breathing. In the sitting position, in the lying position, in the walking position, we can always release the tension. And there are many ways of releasing the tension. The tension in the body may have become a habit. We are used to be tense because we have allowed worries and fear to settle in, and they have created a lot of tension. I remember one time I traveled with a friend in India. He organized my visit in India. And that gentleman belonged to the lowest class of the Indian society. And they have suffered of that discrimination for thousands of years. And that person has embraced the Buddhist practice in order to hope for a kind of life and practice that can liberate him from the world of discrimination. Because Buddhism does not recognize the system of caste. The belonging to the caste of untouchable. Now they have suffered generations after generations. And they try the best, they have tried the best to survive, to overcome that kind of feeling. And that is why there is a lot of tension in the body, transmitted by many generations. So we were sitting in a bus, and I sat next to the window, and I enjoy very much the landscape of India, the beautiful palm trees, the beautiful sunset. And when I look on my right, I saw him very tense, very tense. So I said, "My dear friend, I know that you care very much that I have an enjoyable visit in India. But you see, I'm very happy, I enjoy. So why don't you enjoy also? Sit back and breathe and enjoy. There's nothing to worry about." I was trying to help. He said, "Okay." And he sit back and enjoy. But a few minutes after, when I look back, I saw him tense again. It was a flash of enlightenment. The awareness that you have nothing to worry. You are just sitting on bus. This time can be enjoyable. He got that, get the insight. But he could not get the insight very long. And the worries and the tension come back again. It has become a habit, many generations already. So if you have a community, you have brothers and sisters in the practice that constantly remind you and help you, and then you have a lot of chance to transform that habit energy to worry, to be tense. But if you are alone, it's more difficult, even if you have learned to practice. You have the habit of being tense, and you continue to worry. So the fourth exercise is to become aware of the tension, of the worries that you are having in your body. And breathe in and recognize that there are so many wonders of life inside and outside to enjoy. and to release the tension. So the fourth exercise is very important. Every one of us should learn and master the practice. Whether you are sitting on the bus, or driving our car, or taking a shower, we can always practice the fourth exercise in order to release the tension and connect with the wonders of life. So, dear friends, if you have a job that requires your constant thinking, and make you worry, and feel disconnected with body and with the environment, you know that this fourth exercise is very helpful. Just to breathe and release the tension and reconnect with your body and with the environment. There are many wonders of life, refreshing and healing. And if you get connected, you get the nourishment and healing that your body and your mind need. And in our new civilization, you know, this kind of practice is very crucial, not only to survive, but to be alive again, to live, to learn how to live properly. We are given months and years to live. We should make the best of the time that He is giving us to live. We have to come home to the here and the now, reconnect with our body and our environment, and get the healing, the nourishment that we need. And these exercises are very updated. They help us to not to be carried away by this hectic kind of life. So the fourth is to release tension. In body. And when we are able to release tension in the body, we can reduce the amount of pain in our body. Because the pain in the body is in function with the tension. If we can release the tension, well, the pain will be reduced. The fifth is to recognize a feeling of joy. If there is a feeling of joy, we are able, as a practitioner, to recognize it. And when you recognize a feeling of joy, that joy becomes deeper. Or we can always, as a practitioner, generate a feeling of joy. Create and bring in a moment of joy. As a genuine practitioner, we can generate a feeling of joy whenever we want. Creating joy is a practice, is an art, and it is possible at every moment. So the fifth exercise is to generate a feeling of joy. And the sixth one is to generate a feeling of happiness. Aware or generate joy, happiness. He glad, piti, sukha. And the Buddha tell us how to do it. Because we all need feelings of joy and happiness for our nourishment and healing. The first way to do it is to release, to let go. The Chinese word is to let it go. And the letting go give rise to happiness, to joy and happiness. Li Shen He and Li Shen Lan. This is a joy. This is happiness. Enjoy happiness born from letting go. Letting go of what? The worries, the fear. When we sit together with our brothers and sisters in the Dharma, it might remind us that this moment is to enjoy sitting. There is nothing to do. There is nowhere to go. Why, in a sitting position, you continue to do and to go? So to release the tendency, the habit of trying to do something, to go somewhere. The teaching of the Buddha is that joy and happiness is possible in the here and the now. Dristha, Dhamma, Sukha, Vihara. If you go home to the here and the now, if you reconnect with your body and your environment, you see that there are plenty of conditions of happiness. You don't need to go somewhere and to look for some more conditions of happiness. There are plenty already, more than enough. So release the tension to go somewhere, to do something in order to be happy, because that has become a habit. And that is why letting go is the first condition of happiness. There is an example that can help us understand this. We live in a very busy city, noisy city. And we suffer of the noise, of the dust. And we want to get out of the city on Friday evening, Friday night, Friday afternoon to spend the weekend in the countryside. But we cannot leave the city because we have something to do. But if someone come, a friend come and invite us to go out, and if we can accept, then 1 hour after, we are already outside of the city. It takes about 1 hour to leave the city. And you begin to see rolling hills, the blue sky, beautiful trees, and you feel the breeze on your cheeks. So wonderful. You are happy, you are joyful. Why? Because you are able to leave behind the city. So let go. That is the first way to bring joy and happiness. Letting go. Letting go. Release. Before that, you think that you cannot release, you cannot let go. It's so crucial to your happiness. Only after having let it go, you know that it's not crucial for your happiness. In fact, if you don't release it, and then happiness will become impossible. There are many things we believe to be crucial to our well-being and happiness. But looking deeply, we might recognize that it is exactly of these things that we cannot release that are obstacle for our happiness. An idea may be an obstacle. Our idea of happiness. Every one of us has an idea as how we can be happy. We believe that unless we get that, or we get rid of that, we cannot be happy. And that is only an idea. And that idea, that very idea, may be the main obstacle of our being happy. So releasing that idea may be crucial for happiness to come and joy to come. This is a very deep practice. We have a strong belief that that object of craving, that object of desire, is essential for our happiness. But maybe it has been an obstacle for our happiness, our freedom. So have the courage to let go. That is the first practice to produce joy and happiness. The other practice is mindfulness. Joy and happiness can be born from mindfulness. Because mindfulness helps us to connect with conditions of happiness that we already have. Suppose you are standing with a group of people and in front of you there is a beautiful sunset. And why other people enjoy the beautiful sunset? You don't, because your mind is preoccupied by your fear, your anger, your projects. You are not mindful of the beautiful sunset. You are not there. So the beautiful sunset is not for you. It is for other people. So the difference between you and other people is mindfulness. And mindfulness bring us home to the here and the now so that we can touch the conditions of happiness that are available in the here and the now. That is why mindfulness is a source of happiness. And you are concentrating on these, you are connecting with these conditions of happiness. Suppose you are having a cup of tea. And this may be very good tea. But if you are absorbed in your thinking, in your worries, well, that tea is not for you. Even if you drink 2-3 cups, you are not happy. So mindfulness helps you to be in touch with the good tea. Mindfulness helps you to be truly there. And when you are truly there, something else is also there. Your tea, the beautiful sunset, and many other wonders. That is why mindfulness is a source of happiness. And concentration also. When you drink your tea in concentration, the tea becomes a wonder. And in the tradition of tea ceremony, well, we invite friends to come and sit for 1 hour and 2 hours just for one cup of tea. Because during that 1 hour and 2 hours, we practice mindfulness and concentration. Mindfulness helps us to recognize that to have the time for sitting down and enjoy brotherhood, sisterhood, and a cup of tea. To have that time is wonderful. So we don't need a lot of things. We only need a cup of tea and the presence of friends in order to enjoy 1 hour and 2 hours together. And the essential of a tea ceremony, a tea practice, is not the money you need to buy the tea, to arrange. It is mindfulness and concentration. It is mindfulness and concentration that make the joy and the happiness of the tea ceremony, not something else. You don't need fancy things. Herb tea is good enough, provided that you have mindfulness and concentration. So, according to this practice, a good practitioner is capable of generating a feeling of joy and happiness whenever she wants to. Skillfully, he can generate a feeling of joy, a feeling of happiness for himself and for the other person. Joy and happiness right here and right now. And the seventh exercise is to become aware of a feeling of pain, a painful feeling. Aware of a painful feeling. This is a feeling of joy This is a feeling of happiness. This is a painful feeling. The painful feeling may be there, may come from our body. A physical pain. A pain that does not come from the body, but from a perception. Perception that gives rise to fear, anger, worries. And when a painful feeling arises, mindfulness of breathing, the practice of mindfulness of breathing is to recognize it. Breathing in, I know a painful feeling is in me. Breathing out, I smile to the painful feeling in me. Breathing in, I know this is only a minor pain, a minor physical pain. Breathing out, I recognize the minor physical pain as it is. I do not exaggerate. So there is a painful feeling, a kind of energy. And the practitioner generates another source of energy called mindfulness. So the energy of pain is recognized by the energy of mindfulness. Mindfulness of pain. It may be an emotion, a painful emotion. An emotion of fear, anger, distress, despair. And a good practitioner should know how to handle a painful feeling, a painful emotion. There are people who cannot handle a painful feeling. They suffer too much and they make people around them suffer also. There are people who cannot handle a strong emotion. And many of them believe that the only way to end the suffering is to go and kill themselves. And that so many people committing suicide because they don't know how to handle a strong emotion like fear, anger, despair, worries. They allow themselves to be overwhelmed by the energy of the emotion. And since they believe that there is only way, one only way to end the suffering, that is suicide, that is why many young people, they kill themselves nowadays in many big cities, everywhere. And that is why we have to learn how to handle a painful feeling, a painful emotion. And we have to teach the young people how to do it. As parents, as school teachers, we should help our children, our students, because many of them suffer of painful feelings and emotions. And if parents and teachers know how to do it, they can help the young people. And in Plum Desh, our monks and nuns are trying to work with lay Dhamma teachers to bring this kind of learning and practice to school. we have already begun training school teachers on how to release the tension, how to reduce the pain in the body, how to handle a painful feeling, how to handle a strong emotion. And this can be taught in school. And people and young people do not have, and people do not have to be a Buddhist in order to learn and practice these things. And there are teaching and practice that we can draw from the Buddhist tradition, the Christian tradition, and so on. And that can be transmitted to the younger generation, so that they will learn how to handle the suffering. They would know how to create feeling of joy and happiness. And all of these we call applied ethics. And mindfulness is one of the wonderful ways in order to do it, to create joy, happiness, to handle anger and fear and so on. Say that we should not exaggerate the pain. We should not imagine too much. He uses the image of a person who is hit by an arrow. Of course, there is pain. But if a second arrow comes and strikes exactly at the same spot, the pain would not be only double. It can be 10 times, 100 times more intense. So when you breathe in, you just recognize the pain as it is and do not exaggerate. Do not allow fear, anger, despair to come and multiply, amplify the pain. We should know how to avoid the second arrow to come. And this is the first teaching. First, you breathe in and recognize the pain and to see whether it has come from the body or from the mind, the perception. Because the feeling of pain may come from the body or from a perception. And maybe that is a wrong perception. And in fact, most of perceptions we have are wrong. And it gives rise to fear, anger, and despair. There is that story of a man diagnosed as having cancer of the throat. And the doctor gave him 3 months to live. But after 3 weeks, he died. And when they pay autopsy, there's no cancer in the throat at all. There's a little bit of cancer elsewhere, but that's not strong enough to kill a person. And yet he died after 3 weeks. That is, he died because of the second arrow. So the Buddha said that we should not exaggerate. We should not allow the second arrow to come and suffer. Recognize things as they are with your mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And if you need, you have friends in the Dharma You have doctors, you have other people that help you to see things as they are. Do not exaggerate. And the seventh exercise is to recognize that feeling of pain, that emotion of pain. And the eighth is to embrace tenderly with the energy of mindfulness. There is the energy of pain, there is the energy of mindfulness. And mindfulness is holding tenderly the energy of pain. And that is what a practitioner should do. Mindfulness is not there to suppress, to fight, but to recognize and embrace. Exactly like a mother holding her baby when the baby suffers. The mother does not try to suppress the baby. The mother is holding the baby tenderly. Although the mother does not know yet what is wrong with the baby, but the fact that she is holding the baby tenderly can make the baby suffer less. So the practitioner does not know exactly what is the root of the pain, but the fact that she is holding the pain tenderly, she suffers less already. The mental formation pain and the mental formation mindfulness. There's a mindfulness taking care of pain. So every time we have a painful feeling, a painful emotion, we go back to ourselves and practice mindful breathing, mindful walking, generating that energy of mindfulness in order to recognize and embrace tenderly the pain. And we get a relief. And there are other exercises that follow that help us to look deeply to see the nature of the pain. And with concentration, we can come to understand the nature of that pain, that sorrow. And that insight will be able to liberate and transform the pain and the sorrow. But the eighth exercise is just to embrace and to bring a relief. The seventh is to acknowledge, recognize the pain. The eighth is to embrace the pain tenderly and calm it down. So in this practice, the Buddha recommends that we learn the art of generating joy and happiness. Joy and happiness is an art. That is the fifth and the sixth exercise. And with the seven and eight, that is the art of handling pain and sorrow. So the practice take care of both the lotus and the mud. And if we know how to handle the lotus, we know how to handle the mud. The two things are connected with each other. If you know how to handle pain and sorrow, you know how to produce happiness. Enjoy. And as a good practitioner, we should not be afraid of the mud. We should not be afraid of pain and sorrow. If we know how to make good use of the mud, we can grow the lotus flower. If we know how to handle pain and sorrow, we'll be able to create love and happiness. The two things are linked to each other. And the attitude of being afraid of pain and sorrow, trying to run away from it, does not lead anywhere. We are afraid that
we overwhelmed by the suffering, the pain. That is why we try to run away. But the Buddha said, with the practice of mindful breathing, mindful walking, you generate the energy of mindfulness. You are strong enough to go home and handle the pain and sorrow in you.